Hearty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
Our starting line on the sunny side of sports is African athletics. Ethiopia's Shura Tola won the overall title in Sunday's Minova Frankfurt Marathon in Germany, clocking 2 hours, 5 minutes, and 50 seconds, while Kenya's Vivian Cheruiyot won the women's race in 2 hours, 23 minutes, and 35 seconds. It was the first career marathon title for the 34-year-old Cheruiyot, who won an Olympic gold medal at 5,000 meters last year in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. The energetic Andy Edwards caught up with Vivian after the race. Here's Andy.
Well, Vivian Cheruiyot of Kenya ran a really impressive performance, personal best to win the Minova Frankfurt women's title today. And Vivian, 2:23, 35, 15 seconds inside your personal best. Was it tough the latter stages? Because you, once you crossed the line, you looked like you were suffering, as many marathon runners do, even the winners.
The race was good, a little bit windy. And after 32 to 35K, I was feeling my legs was a little bit heavy, and I did the best, but I think the wind was too much and I'm light, but I'm okay. I'm happy for the time also.
Of course, you've run your fastest ever. This was your second marathon. Perhaps there were some tough lessons to learn. I mean, you've won. You've beaten some very good runners who have run faster than a marathon from you, but is that another lesson learned as you continue your marathon career?
Yes, I'm seeing that marathon career in athletics, if for me, I'm going to do my best. Maybe when I'll do the next marathon, I'm going to continue doing the best.
And just lastly, impressions of running into the Festhalle, the festival hall in Frankfurt. It's a very unusual finish, the red carpet. I know you were suffering, but did you have time to feel happy and excited?
Yeah, you know, the finishing line, it's very unique with the other marathons. So I was really happy when I was crossing the line. And also for a win for me in marathon, it's really nice. It shows that there is good things ahead for me.
I'm sure there's going to be quite a few more ahead for you. Vivian Cheruiyot, thank you very much. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Hello, sports fans. This is Paul Tergat, marathon champion from Kenya. You are listening to the Sony side of sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Keep on sunny side, always on sunny side. Keep on sunny side of life. It will help us every day. It will brighten all the way. It will keep on sunny side of life.
Short fighters are always tougher, I think. You know, they've got no neck. They can tuck up and they've been dealing with guys my height their whole life, so they know how to roll shots and get out of the way of punches. And I'm used to dealing with guys my height, which I was dealing with training for Pulev, so it's just a bit more tricky, you know, but we got there in the end.
In the end, world heavyweight boxing champion Anthony Joshua held on to his title belts after what many believed was a premature stoppage in his fight over the weekend against Carlos Takam in Cardiff, Wales. Yours truly, and our reigning prince of pugilistics, Namdi Hollywood Moeta, as well as fans ringside in Cardiff, booed the decision by referee Phil Edwards to stop the fight. Joshua cut Takam over the right eye with a punch in round four, then dropped him later in the round with a left hook. AJ was clearly in front on the scorecards as Takam frequently rubbed away blood from cuts over both eyes. But that said, I thought the Cameroon-born challenger turned in a valiant effort, and he's asked for a rematch. Among those criticizing Joshua's performance was WBC heavyweight champion Deontay Wilder, who questioned AJ's stamina in the fight. Wilder will defend his WBC title belt against the Haitian-Canadian Bermane Stiverne on November 4th in New York City. It's a rematch. Wilder beats Stiverne by unanimous decision in January 2015 to first capture the WBC heavyweight title. Meanwhile, today marks the 43rd anniversary of the Rumble in the Jungle, the epic heavyweight showdown between Muhammad Ali and George Foreman in Kinshasa, the capital of the Democratic Republic of Congo. Ali, who died last year at age 74, knocked out the previously undefeated Foreman in the eighth round in Kinshasa to recapture the heavyweight crown. Hall of Fame trainer Angelo Dundee was in Ali's corner for the Rumble in the Jungle. Angelo died in 2012 at age 90. In this encore Sunny Side of Sports presentation, let's listen in again as I chat with Angelo about the dramatic bout in the DRC.
Hello.
Hey, Angelo.
Yeah.
This is Sonny Young from Voice of America.
Yeah.
How you doing?
All right.
Angelo, reflect a little bit. What are your main memories of that fight in the former Zaire?
Well, you know, it was such an event. You know, you get there and we're the good guys, you know, right there, Ali Boumaye. And he was like a hero there. And the Zaire people are so goddamn nice. It's a shame. You know, the country's having their problems. And everybody I met there was so congenial and nice, and the fun part of it was a guy named Chimpupu Chimpupu Wa Chimpupa. He was the PR guy.
Okay.
And he'd make us go. See, we were outside of Kinshasa. We were like 45 minutes away in the government complex called Nasseli. That's where they entertained all the African nations. And we all had villas facing the Congo River. And God forbid we said Congo River. It was supposed to get called the Zaire River. And we used to look forward to going to the gym every day. In fact, on my off duties, I used to train lizards. That's what I got. It made a good hit with the newspaper guys. When they came, it was a rainy day. We didn't go to the gym. And these lizards, these big lizards, we'd be walking across like the banisters.
Right.
And I said, wait a minute. Let me tell you what I did. And I said, see that lizard? I trained that sucker. Now watch. He's going to go five steps and do push-ups. No matter where you go, you got to have a sense of humor.
Angelo, did Foreman train close to Muhammad, or were
He trained right across the way from us, and we used to spy on him. I used to borrow Howard Bingham's telescopic lens and watch him from behind the hiding spots. We're like little kids, you know, because you don't see nothing in the gym. There's nothing to check, you know. But we had fun, so. This is the whole key, you know. People don't realize to excel at what you do, you got to have fun with it. And we always had fun with Muhammad every day. Every day, 19 years, I had fun, you know. So what the hell? This is what it's all about.
Angelo, was the weather a factor in that fight, the heat in the former Zaire?
Well, you got to remember, we trained in Florida, Miami. Muhammad loves the heat. In fact, to this day, Muhammad calls me, he threatens me, he's going to come down and sweat. I says, please do.
Do you think the heat bothered Big George more than it did Muhammad?
Well, no. I just think it was meant to be, you know, this is what happens in boxing. Isn't that a horrible career to have, you know, if somebody out there can lick you? Isn't that tough? I mean, you're a great fighter, and There's somebody out there might do a number on you. The only guy that didn't taste that was Rocky Marciano, God bless him, because he retired undefeated. And another kid from Thailand retired undefeated.
Angelo, looking back on the Rumble in the Jungle, would that fight have happened without the electric-haired man, Don King?
No, he was in the right place at the right time. Had the connections, the complexions to give us the right direction. That's what Muhammad used to say about me. Angelo got the connections and the directions to give you the right direction. That's right. So we applied it the other way. No, it was meant to be. Don King's a hell of a promoter. He went there and they wanted to name their country a new name, you know, get rid of that Belgian Congo thing, and then name their country Zaire. And Mobutu's a very, very, you know, that Zaire's a big country. I think it's bigger than the United States. Yeah, big. And this guy ran it. He was a remarkable guy. He used to go all his provinces by helicopter. He was a hell of a man.
Angelo, where does the Rumble in the Jungle rate in the Muhammad Ali legacy?
Well, it's got to be one of the greatest happenings, the changing of a name, government. Well, Muhammad, you know, it was a happening any place we ever went. You know, I get letters 10 a week maybe, you know, letting us want pictures and stuff like that. It's remarkable, you know, because here I was with a guy who was a living legend. And in his career now, I'm his fistic voice because the guy can't talk. And I know it breaks his heart. He loved to talk. He loved it because he loved talking to the media. He enjoyed that. And I pride myself with that. I pushed him towards that because if you want to be a superstar, these guys will make you a superstar. And, you know, that's why he was so great with the media. He was the first superstar that did that. Never happened before.
That's Hall of Fame boxing trainer Angelo Dundee, who died in 2012 at age 90. Let's give a Sunnyside of Sports salute to England's national under-17 soccer team, which lifted the World Cup trophy after a 5-2 victory over Spain in Kolkata, India. The head coach of the English boys is Steve Cooper.
I'm speechless. The feeling is a little bit surreal. I think it might even feel a bit better tomorrow once we actually realise what we have done. The players were fantastic all through the tournament, the staff. In my opinion, worthy winners of the tournament, the way we've played, the amount of goals we've scored, that we've conceded, the football that we've played, individual talent, team identity and character, personality. And, you know, to be 2-0 down in a World Cup, in my opinion, against the run of play, and to come back and win 5-2 tells you everything about the character of English players.
The character of English players was also on display earlier this year in South Korea, where they won the FIFA Under-20 World Cup title, as they now hold both the FIFA Under-17 and FIFA Under-20 trophies. The future of English football looks bright. Once again, Steve Cooper.
For me, it's recognition of where English football not just is, but where it can go and where we want it to go. And to think that we're the holders now of the 17s and 20s World Cup is, for me, pretty special.
Pretty special indeed. That's Steve Cooper, the head coach of England's World Cup champion under-17 national football team, and he was speaking in Kolkata, India. Major League Baseball's World Series resumes Tuesday night in Los Angeles, California. That's where the Los Angeles Dodgers face a must-win situation against the Houston Astros in Game 6. The Dodgers trail 3-2 in what's turning out to be a thrilling World Series for baseball fans. In the second longest World Series game in history, a contest that lasted 5 hours and 17 minutes, the Astros beat the visiting Dodgers 13-12 in 10 innings in an epic Game 5. Third baseman Alex Bregman hit a walk-off single into left field off Dodgers relief pitcher Kenley Jansen to score pinch runner Derek Fisher with the winning run. There were 7 home runs hit in Game 5, including a towering 2-run homer in the 7th inning by Houston's Puerto Rican shortstop Carlos Correa.
I think it's crazy, man, to just be part of it. It's just such a blessing. But, man, these games are hard on me, man. I feel like I'm going to have a heart attack out there every single time. You know, there's high pressure out there. Game is going back and forth. Both teams are great, scoring runs and, you know, the putting up bats together. And it's just, you know, there's a lot of pressure on you when you're out there and, you know, you want to win a game and you want to win the World Series. So, you know, I hopefully we can win one more game and then take a break because this is hard on me.
I'm sure it's also hard on the respective managers of the Astros and the Dodgers. First, we'll hear from Astros manager A.J. Hinch.
Just when I thought I could describe game two as my favorite game of all time, I think game five exceeded that and more. So it's hard to put into words all the twists and turns in that game, the emotion, doing it home in front of our home crowd.
Meanwhile, A.J. Hinch's coaching counterpart for the Los Angeles Dodgers is Dave Roberts.
I think this whole series has been an emotional roller coaster. It's the two best teams playing for a championship, and these are two teams that play 27 outs like we've talked about. And so you're not going to expect those guys to lay down. And obviously you saw what our guys did tonight and competed to the last out. So credit to all, you know, to our guys. Guys want to take the baseball. Guys coming up with big hits in big spots. And that's what the World Series is all about.
Los Angeles Dodgers manager Dave Roberts. Once again, Major League Baseball's World Series resumes Tuesday night in Southern California, where the Dodgers will host the Houston Astros in Game 6. The Astros lead 3-2 and can clinch their first World Series title in club history with a victory in Los Angeles. Joining us once again on the Sunny Side of Sports is Andrew Palcheski, the VOA's social media reporter. Sporty greetings, Andrew.
Sporty greetings, Sunny. Good to be here with you.
Welcome back, Andrew. What's trending on this Monday?
Well, Sunny, everybody is talking about that game last night, 13-12, almost like a football score. And it was on Sunday, which is usually the big football day
right.
Here in the U.S.
That's right.
Might be a little odd football score. You usually see 7 or 14 or 21, kind of those numbers. But 13-12, certainly in the realm of possibility.
A lot of runs,
you know, and it's funny, a lot of people talking about that this was supposed to be a big pitcher's duel between Dallas Keuchel of the Houston Astros and Clayton Kershaw of the LA Dodgers, two arguably the two best pitchers, the best pitcher on each team, but Dallas Keuchel had the shortest start of his career at Houston's Minute Maid Park. He only lasted about three and a half innings or so. Clayton Kershaw has given up 8 home runs in this World Series so far, which is a Major League Baseball record. And this series has so many records that have come about. As you mentioned, it's the second longest game ever in World Series history. People saying that it was only 10 innings or 10 innings allegedly, because it felt like it was a lot longer. It was so packed full of stuff. But the home runs, I mean, 14 different players have hit home runs in this World Series,
incredible,
which is a new record.
Incredible.
22 home runs hit so far. We have at least one more game to play, possibly 2 more games if it goes a full 7 games. So already that record's been set. So this has been an exciting, exciting series. And you heard A.J. Hinch, the manager for the Astros, say he thought Game 2 was his favorite game ever until last night. And that's kind of what the fans think. You know, there were so many tweets and messages on social media that I saw after Game 2 where fans said this was the greatest baseball game they had ever seen. They've had to revise that after last night. They said, no, this is the greatest baseball game. People saying it is, you know, better than any game they could ever have thought of, with the Astros coming back 3 separate times, the home runs, the back and forth. It was just exciting, exciting baseball.
It sure seems like Dodgers-Astros will go down as one of the great World Series, Andrew. And last year, when the Cubs won their first title in 108 years by beating the Indians, that was regarded as a great World Series.
Yeah, fans have been very spoiled and very lucky to see such great matchups over the past couple years, and they are very much looking forward to that Game 6 to see if the series goes on. I think a lot of fans want to see a Game 7 just because they want to see what other crazy things are going to happen. But the odds and the history, Sonny, are on Houston's side, because when a World Series is tied 2-2. The Game 5 winner has gone on to win 28 of the past 42 times. So the odds are, and that's about, you know, 65% of the time, 66% of the time or so. So the odds are in Houston's favor. It's not impossible for the Dodgers to come back. They've got to win 2 at home there in Los Angeles. But if Houston can capture one of those games, they will win their first ever World Series.
And again, they might be the sentimental favorites because of the hurricane that hit their city earlier this year.
Yeah, for sure. A lot of Houston strong. We're seeing a lot of those tributes from folks around the country, remembering the folks who were impacted by Hurricane Harvey. The city is still recovering from that, and this would be a nice shot in the arm for the city of Houston, for sure.
Well, speaking of shots in the arm, Andrew, maybe those NBA finalists of last season, the Warriors and the Cavs, can use a shot in the arm.
Oh, that's saying something for sure. It's been quite an unusual and, for Cavs and Warriors fans, disappointing start to the NBA season. And that was perhaps best encapsulated over the weekend with Kristaps Porzingis and the New York Knicks, not really known as a powerhouse these days, not the best team at all in the NBA, taking down the Cleveland Cavaliers, and not just taking them down, blowing them out 114-95. Quite a surprising result there. If that wasn't enough, the Detroit Pistons erased a 14-point deficit against the defending champion Golden State Warriors, and they beat the Warriors 115-107. So people are asking, what has happened to these two teams that were supposed to be the powerhouses? These are the two teams that have met for the past 3 years in the finals. A lot of fans were expecting it to be a four-peat. We already penciled them in to the end of the season to have Golden State taking on Cleveland, and they're not so sure now. They're saying that these two teams are not playing the way that you would expect teams who have been to the finals for the past 3 years to play. Some question about whether they're working out the kinks. It's early yet in the season, so there's hope that they're just trying to get things together and get on track, but not what you would expect at all. Fans are just scratching their heads, wondering what's going on with these two teams.
Well, we'll see whether LeBron and Steph and all those galaxy of stars can get their acts together.
Yeah, and as one person said, if the Pistons can beat Golden State, then anything is possible. So, you know, it's going to be an interesting basketball season. There are some teams that have not been traditionally great that have made some moves in the offseason. I'm thinking about the Philadelphia 76ers, the Minnesota Timberwolves. All these teams out there that could make a run at it if these two teams falter. And so I think a lot of players and a lot of fans have their eyes on these two teams. They may not be fans of Golden State and the Cavaliers, but they're going to be watching and seeing what goes on, and seeing, hoping their team can make a run for it.
Well, as we go back to the World Series, Andrew, as the Astros make a run for their first World Series title, Houston's National Football League team trending these days.
Yeah, this is a follow-up to a story that we talked about on Friday. And just a reminder for our listeners, on Friday we talked about Bob McNair, who's the owner of the Houston Texans football team. He reportedly said, when talking about the national anthem protests, "We can't have the inmates running the prison." And many people thought that was a racially charged comment because McNair is white. Many of the players on the team are black. And so this set off allegations of racism and questions about what the team would do on Sunday when they took on the Seattle Seahawks. Well, we saw yesterday that the team, the Houston Texans, protested McNair's words with a majority of the team, by some estimates, 75 or 80% of the team, kneeling before the start of the game. And joining him in that protest were some of the Seattle Seahawks players who had been protesting not just McNair's words, but protesting the national anthem as a result of the treatment of African Americans. Again, going back to Colin Kaepernick's protest started a couple of years ago. John McClain, who's a reporter that's covered football for the Houston Chronicle newspaper for decades, said this is the first time this season the Texans had engaged in any protest. So most of the players had not engaged in a protest, but they made a big show of it on Sunday with nearly everybody kneeling. Now it remains to be seen what they're going to do next. Some fans say they should walk out and refuse to play. We'll see if that happens.
Andrew Palcheski, the VOA social media reporter. Thank you, Andrew.
Thanks, Sonny.
And that wraps up the October 30th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer John Dryden. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the sunny side of sports.
I get it.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The annual pre-harvest agribusiness event in Ghana is recognized as the largest annual gathering of farmers, buyers, manufacturers, government officials, development partners, and financial institutions. It draws private sector investment and encourages the sustainable growth of agribusinesses. Earlier this month, the United States Agency for International Development, or USAID, through the U.S. government's Feed the Future initiative, in collaboration with the government of Ghana and AgriHouse Foundation, organized the event to build business relationship around the upcoming 2017 maize, rice, and soybean harvest. In attendance were Deputy Minister of Food and Agriculture, Dr. Sagre Bambanji, Northern Regional Minister Honorable Salufu Saeed, and USAID Ghana Agriculture Team Leader Jenna Touchman, who emphasized the importance of expanding economic opportunities for smallholder farmers and unlocking the potential of Ghanaian agribusinesses. The pre-harvest event brought together over 1,000 agribusiness stakeholders across the country to network and learn about the latest technological advances in agriculture. Participants shared lessons learned and identified opportunities and challenges within the sector. The event featured business-to-business sessions as well as an exhibition showcasing improved agricultural equipment, inputs, and services. The event served as a platform to rally agribusiness stakeholders and the private sector to forge partnerships and make strategic investments to spur economic growth. Ms. Touchman shared that, in Ghana, our Feed the Future program aims to expand economic opportunities and boost agricultural productivity. Over 85,000 individuals applied improved technologies and practices on over 72,600 hectares of land. The application of these improved technologies, combined with training and marketing assistance, led to farmer beneficiaries selling produce valued at over $120 million following the 2016 growing season. Now is the time to sustain this momentum and continue making investments that ensure Ghana's progress, especially as Ghana advances the Beyond Aid agenda. The pre-harvest agribusiness event has been held annually since 2010 and was organized through Feed the Future, the U.S. government's Global Hunger and Food Security Initiative. Over the years, the event has linked rural farmers to new market opportunities and gained the support of the private sector. The U.S. is proud to work with Ghana and its private sector partners to expand economic opportunity and agricultural production for the people of Ghana and the Africa region.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Africa, this is James Brottie, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
We are always glad to have our listeners throughout Africa tuning in to our newscast covering Africa News. Tune in on the top of each hour 24/7. VOA is your trusted source of news and information.